KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
This is 89.9 KCRW. I'm Marisa Lagos, filling in for Madeline Brandt. Let's get into some film reviews. We're getting a little historical this week with a biopic, a documentary, and some 80s nostalgia. Here now are our critics Sean Edwards and Monica Castillo. Sean Edwards is an award-winning film critic for Fox 4 News in Kansas City. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And Monica Castillo is a freelance film critic who's written for The New York Times, RogerEbert.com, and The Village Voice. Welcome back to you as well.
Thank you for having us.
So first up, we've got some family frights with Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. This is a sequel to 2021 Ghostbusters Afterlife, where the Spangler family moves to the New York City firehouse where it all started and teams up with the original Ghostbusters. This one stars Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon, and Finn Wolfhard, and features the return of OGs Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, and more.
Now it's headed straight for us.
Is something trying to get out?
Many things.
It's commanding an army of the undead.
I think we're all going to die.
Monica, all right. I'm an 80s kid. I loved Ghostbusters. My kids recently discovered the original. And this one really seems to be playing on that nostalgia, right? With Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, even Annie Potts suiting up. Do you think it works?
Oh, gosh, I really wish it did. But it is more of a nostalgia fest than anything else. It really made me feel like I wanted to watch the originals, which I guess is kind of effective in that way. But in and of itself, I didn't have that much fun. All the references are fine. You know, Slimer's back. The old crew is back. There's a lot of other references to the movies and even just some of the ways that the scenes are shot. But the actual film itself, there's so much stuffed into it. One of my notes says, feels overstuffed like a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. I just think it's just not very well done. I miss the goofiness of the originals.
Bummer. Sean, do you agree? Do you think the film could stand on its own if you're not a fan of the originals?
No, the film 100% does not stand on its own. That's the problem, because this film may have broken the record of the number of times a sequel referenced the original, which is saying something in this age of lazy filmmaking. I mean, it's all nostalgic factor. Everything about it is chilly. Everything that happens is completely cold. There's nothing new. There's nothing original. They rely too heavily on the OGs. And then the cast from Afterlife, I mean, Paul Rudd, pun intended, is clueless. They don't give the kids anything to do. And the poor mom might as well be in a science fiction film because she's completely in outer space. They do nothing with her. They do nothing with anyone in this film. And at this point now, you might as well just watch the original, which after watching, you realize wasn't that good in the first place.
All right. Well, if you still want to see it, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is in theaters in wide release today. Okay, next we're switching gears to the biopic Shirley, written and directed by 12 Years a Slave's Oscar-winning writer John Ridley. Regina King plays the first ever Black congresswoman, Shirley Chisholm, as she launches her 1972 presidential campaign.
I'm paving the road for a lot of other people looking like me to get elected.
Brooklyn's first Black representative.
You're about to make history.
You want to be president? You ain't no man.
Maybe we should find your mother.
All you got is your one vote.
You sound just like every other politician.
Do I look like every other politician?
All right. Well, Sean, I'm a political writer, so I have heard a lot about Shirley Chisholm. But in 1972, a newly minted Black female politician was a tough sell as a presidential candidate. Tell us a little more about the challenges she faced and how it's depicted in the film. Did you think it made for a compelling watch?
Well, here's the problem. Shirley Chisholm is an extremely important figure in the history of American politics and rightfully deserves a movie about her life and her political career. And Shirley, which will stream on Netflix, is a baffling case of misuse of the platform, because the task of telling her compelling story in 1 hour and 55 minutes is impossible. So why not make this a series? That's the biggest problem. However, John Ridley tries to solve that problem by smartly deciding to focus only on her political run for presidency in 1972. And while watching this film, you sort of got to, you know, fasten your seatbelt, because it really zooms through her challenges and successes without really explaining much. It's really a cinematic Wikipedia page, which is unfortunate because there's a lot here you could weed through. Like, you know, her struggles with the women's movement, her struggle with the Black Caucus, her struggle with, you know, her own team that she put together to help her run for the candidacy. But the biggest sin in the movie is they never really fully explain why she actually decided to run for president of the United States, which is a huge deal, particularly for a Black woman in 1972. And they sort of leave that out because they're really aiming this towards a more of a mainstream audience, which is fine. But for anyone like yourself, who's a political junkie, or someone like me who finds, you know, politics really fascinating, it's not the film for you, because the intellectual level of what's being presented never soars. But don't take away from Regina King's fabulous performance. Regina King can only deliver what's on the page. And that's really sort of inexcusable, because John Ridley's a great writer. He won an Oscar for 12 Years a Slave, but none of that pedigree is demonstrated with this film.
Monica, how about you? What did you think of Regina King's performance as Shirley?
That was the highlight of the film. Unfortunately, I think she and the cast, Lance Riddick, Lucas Hedges, even Terrence Howard, are batting way above the stadium that they're playing in. I thought this was just lit, composed, shot, written so badly that it made me want to watch a better Shirley Chisholm film, because she is such a remarkable figure. She's accomplished so much and broke so many barriers and had to deal with a lot of stuff. We haven't seen that story yet, I don't think.
All right. Well, Shirley's in select theaters now and will stream on Netflix tomorrow. Moving on, we have the American Society of Magical Negroes, starring Justice Smith and David Alan Greer.
We fight white discomfort every day, because the happier they are, the safer we are.
The name needs a little updating, maybe like Magical Black People, or I guess that doesn't have the same ring.
You ready?
Oh, wow.
Your first client is a Jason Munn. His morale is far too low.
Hey.
Hey.
Darn it. I was hoping there was a station right next to him.
Oh, is this one spoken for?
No.
Sean, this film's title plays on the trope of Black people who sort of magically appear to assist white characters. Does it hold up as a satire comedy?
Not at all. I promise you, I love watching movies. It's just, unfortunately, this was a bad thing. nothing about this movie works at all, including one of the worst titles in the history of motion pictures. Yes, I understand the trope. The trope has existed since people began making movies. And yes, it is a subject matter that is ripe for satire. And it's come up before. I mean, Spike Lee did Bamboozle. Robert Townsend did Hollywood Shuffle. And even more recently, I mean, even some elements of Get Out touched on it. Sorry to Bother You touched on it. They cloned Tyrone. That touched on it. Those were all much better movies. The reason why this doesn't work as a satire is because, number one, it doesn't work by definition of what a satire is. Number two, the movie is just flat out not funny. And number three, it does a complete reversal almost 5 minutes into the film, because it's technically a rom-com. Mm. And this whole focus on this elite group of Black people that are tasked with eliminating white people from being put in uncomfortable positions in society is basically just the backdrop for a love story that doesn't work, because the lead, Justice Smith, is talented as he's been in the past. It's just, he's boring. You don't care about him. He seems very aloof in the film. There's no chemistry with the love interest. None of it works as a satire, and it completely fails as a rom-com. And you're expecting this hard-hitting, biting take on racism in America, and you get none of it.
All right, Monica, not the most singing endorsement there. And the movie does have a lot on its plate, right? This is a surreal plot, social commentary, comedy, apparently a romantic interest. On top of it, it is comedian, actor, writer Kobe Libby's debut feature as a director. How do you feel? Did he come out of the gate swinging, or did he kind of play it safe with all these spinning plates?
Yeah, I'm with Sean. it kind of felt, it absolutely fell flat. I mean, I sat down in the theater, and within 5 minutes, I knew exactly where this was going to go, how this was going to play out. And we spend most of our time with the most boring people in the most boring place, this sort of tech startup knockoff situation. I mean, it was strange. They were trying to, like, even just address the situation and mention the trope, but then there's no actual excavation or exploration of the full implications of it. It could have been interesting. There could have been so much more creativity either within, you know, one realm or the other, but I thought it was very bland. I do want to single out David Alan Greer as the movie's MVP because he sells the pitch so much better, and anytime he disappears, I'm very sad.
All right. Well, the American Society of Magical Negroes is in wide release theaters now. Last up, we have Carol Doda, Topless at the Condor. This is a documentary by directors Marlo McKenzie and Jonathan Parker, and it takes us back to 1960s San Francisco when dancer Carol Doda became the first person in the country to dance topless in public.
San Francisco is a happening town.
I want to be in show business, and I don't know any other way but to start showing my business.
Carol Doda in the Condor Club usher in this era of topless dancing.
It was a sensation.
She was brave enough to do something no one had done before.
This isn't your usual costume, is it?
Oh, well, I don't think so. Do you?
Monica, I live in San Francisco, so we talk about Carol Doda a lot here, but I don't know that a lot of people associate her with the women's liberation movement more broadly. Can you talk about the documentary's depiction of who she was and what you thought?
I'm also a little mixed on this documentary. I thought it did a really great job of introducing Carol Doda, who she was. I wasn't familiar with her. They do a great job of making those connections between her and the feminist movement. But then after all this wonderful buildup and zany stories and all that fun San Francisco club history, it just kind of peters off and that energy just leaves the room and then you're left with some really sad stories. I was hoping for a little bit more. There's some really great use of archive footage and photos, and then you start to realize they're repeating some of them. So there's like kind of stretching it out, even though they have a small selection of what they were able to source. So that was a little disappointing. I was just hoping for better, but you know, as far as illustrated Wikipedia pages go, this was, you know, entertaining for the first half.
All right. Sean, do you think it's worth the watch?
First off, I do agree with what was just said, but I also say it is worth a watch just because it was sort of a discovery for me because I had heard the name, but I didn't know a lot about the person. So I did appreciate that, like her background. And yes, the first 20, 30 minutes, even about the first 40 minutes are very interesting. And you learn so much.
And it seems like there's some good archival footage in there, right?
The setup is almost perfect. I mean, the archival footage is great. Like everything is there for this to be a great documentary. They just did not know how to nail the ending. But I still found it fascinating. I also found it heartbreaking. And it also justifies that Carol Doda deserves a feature film because they did a better job of tying her to the feminist movement than the Netflix film Shirley did, tying Shirley Chisholm to the feminist movement, which is insane. I mean, she almost comes off as a bigger activist and advocate for women's rights than Shirley Chisholm does in the Shirley film. So they got that part right.
Sean coming back to throw more shade on Shirley.
Because, yes, it's such a huge missed opportunity, particularly now in an era where the trend now is to erase Black history and to have such a powerful figure of Black history get set up for her moment and be someone that not a lot of people know about, and then you don't deliver is inexcusable to me.
All right. Okay, well, I mean, I gotta say, you guys kind of threw cold water on all of our films this week. Is there anything folks should go out and seek out this weekend that they should be watching? Monica, I'll start with you.
Sure. I was really charmed by this neo fairy tale called Riddle of Fire. I didn't get the chance to see it earlier, but it made the rounds on the film festival circuit. And then it just happened to kind of fall in my lap by recommendation. And it's super charming. You're just following kids through this like impossible task of trying to create a blueberry pie. And it becomes the most fanciful, very cute, very appealing sort of a venture to just like follow them on. I would highly recommend folks check it out if it's playing in a city near you.
Awesome. Sean, anything you want to direct people towards?
I do want to direct people to Shirley on Netflix. I'm a critic, so I'm being hypercritical about the film, but I want people to see it because Shirley Chisholm deserves to be known. I didn't mention, though, the 2022 miniseries Mrs. America dedicated an entire episode to Shirley Chisholm, which is actually better than the entire Shirley film. So Uza Adiba played Shirley Chisholm. She was actually great in that miniseries.
Yeah.
That miniseries was spectacular, in my opinion. And I thought they did a far better job of really introducing Shirley Chisholm, who she was. And they really got into her ambition and why she wanted to run for president of the United States much better than the Shirley movie.
And wasn't she nominated for that?
Yes, she was for the Emmy. Yeah, that's
Uza?
Correct. Yes, she was.
All right. That does it for this week. Sean Edwards is a film critic for Kansas City's Fox 4 News, and Monica Castillo is a freelance film critic and senior film programmer at the Jacob Burns Film Center in New York. Thank you so much to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.